Nonprofit hospitals in New Jersey may be breathing a sigh of relief today. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Governor Chris Christie has proposed a 2-year freeze on local efforts to challenge hospitals' exemption from property taxes. Details from WHYY's Alana Gordon.
Nonprofit hospitals in New Jersey, which are most hospitals, are exempt from property taxes. But last year, a judge ruled in favor of a municipality that challenged Morristown Medical Center's tax-exempt status, even as a nonprofit. John Jacoby from Seton Hall Law School in Newark says that precedent could affect a lot of other hospitals.
If that is no longer regarded as consistent with nonprofit tax-exempt operation, then all the hospitals in New Jersey should be nervous, and they are nervous.
Several other New Jersey cities followed suit with their own challenges. Nationwide, there's been a growing scrutiny of whether the community services that nonprofits provide balances out their tax exemption and whether all their activities match their nonprofit nature. But Jacoby also says hospital systems are incredibly complicated. Now, Governor Christie is calling for a measure to freeze any municipal efforts to reverse a hospital's tax-exempt status for 2 years. And he's calling for a special committee to examine those issues in the meantime.
The commission will provide for a comprehensive review of the property tax exemption statute and develop proposals for consideration by the executive branch and the legislature that will address the tax exemption in a manner that is fair to the hospitals, fair to the municipalities, and most of all, fair to local taxpayers.
The State Hospital Association supports the governor's proposal. It would still need legislative approval. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
Federal regulators plan to tighten safety rules around the nation's network of nearly 300,000 miles of gas pipelines. The Pipeline and Hazardous Material Safety Administration, or PHMSA, says it will soon propose new rules that include more oversight of old pipelines. Regulators cite a series of high-profile accidents and explosions, such as one in San Bruno, California, that killed 8 people. Artelia Gilliard is a spokesperson for the agency.
The rule would advance safety for communities that live near pipeline infrastructure and also protect the environment by updating the regulatory framework.
The rules also mean more oversight for thousands of miles of rural gathering lines, which carry gas from wells to larger transmission pipelines. The Interstate Natural Gas Association of America, a trade group representing pipeline companies, says it's examining the proposal and already has its own safety initiative with a goal of zero pipeline incidents. Tomorrow, the 2 high-rise towers and 15 low-rise buildings of the Norman Blumberg Apartments in North Philadelphia will be imploded. It's part of the City Housing Authority's massive redevelopment of the Sharswood neighborhood. The 90-year-old Miller Memorial Baptist Church is merely steps away from the towers. Ashley Hahn of our Plan Philly project and WHYY's Jeanette Woods talked to church leaders who are remarkably calm about the demolition. Ashley has our report.
In the late 1960s, building the Blumberg housing wiped out 8 row house blocks. But the 500-unit project was built around Miller Memorial Baptist Church, sitting on 22nd Street between Oxford and Jefferson. The church will outlive the complex and see the next generation of public housing. And it has stories to tell.
My mother and father met at this church. They married. I attended Miller Memorial all my life. So I've seen a lot of changes.
Cynthia Fisher is a church trustee and a member for 66 years.
I know when this was the area to be in, we've seen some changes happen. And we're seeing multiple changes happening even before us now. As we walk around, drive around, we can see new construction going up. And I think it's for the better of the community.
Around the church, there are vacant lots and parcels with fresh foundations. Old row houses are being torn down, and new construction is beginning. Thousands of neighbors have been displaced. Sunday school superintendent Rhoda Chasten says they've already felt the change.
Some of our members lived in Blumberg, and they had to relocate. Now they've moved all over the city. And unless our van goes to pick them up, the transportation is limited. So not only is the environment changing, but it's changing the culture of our church.
Deacon Emeritus Ed Awkward has done outreach ministry in the neighborhood for 16 years.
I got to know a lot of these people and saying goodbye to a lot of those folks that I've been with for years. tears came into my eyes, but they had to go, you know. And my heart went out to them when they had to leave.
You can read the stats about the project, the promised number of new units, the proposed commercial development, and job opportunities. But what's difficult to understand is how disruptive it will be for so many people. Again, Rhoda Chasten.
I like the improvement, but I don't like some of the ways people are being pushed out.
But right now, the immediate change, the word on everyone's lips,
inclusion. Yes.
Throw a stone from the church's back door, and you could hit one of the Bloomberg Towers.
We were concerned about the implosion causing structural damage to the building.
Representatives from the Housing Authority and the demolition contractor have promised a temporary protective covering for the historic church. The morning after the implosion is Palm Sunday. Deacon Chester Hampton, a Philadelphia police officer who will be on duty at the implosion, hopes the church can open for services.
We are also making temporary plans to suspend services that Friday and Saturday, and that Sunday is questionable right now, depending on how everything works out that Saturday.
The leaders of Miller Memorial Baptist are confident they can weather the uncertainties, and they're optimistic about the neighborhood's future and the congregation's. Cynthia Fisher envisions a new Sharswood, thriving, with the church at the center.
The change that's coming, we don't know why, but we're here, and we're here to receive whatever God sends us. But there's something coming, flowing towards us, and we have to be able to reach out and bring it in.
I'm Ashley Hahn for Plan Philly, WHYY News.
WHYY's Jeanette Woods produced this report. When the U.S. Justice Department released a report on Philadelphia police practices last year, it found, quote, significant strife and distrust between the community and the police department. The feds say part of the problem is that officers often bring an unconscious bias to bear in their interactions with residents. As WHYY's Bobby Allen reports, one expert who recently trained police supervisors hopes to fix that.
Lori Friedel starts her training in front of Philly police captains by playing a clip from the UK's version of American Idol.
All right, what's your name, darling?
My name is Susan Boyle.
You can hear the audience chuckling. Boyle's wearing a long, frumpy dress and says she's from a small village. It isn't exactly the vision of a superstar singer. But then she starts.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by.
It blows everyone away. Here's criminologist Friedel.
And we present this as a non-threatening way to introduce how we draw conclusions about people just based on their appearances. And sometimes those conclusions are just wrong.
It's a lighthearted example of a serious problem that's at the heart of tense police-community relations, Friedel says. A lot of police officers she talks to are at first pretty defensive when confronted with the issue of bias in policing.
And this is very understandable because we've treated law enforcement in this nation as if they all have explicit biases. That has been the nature of our training. That has been the nature of our discussion.
But eventually, she says, they start to open up. Just imagine, an officer rolls up on a scene.
You know, am I dealing with a white woman in a sundress? And might that make me undervigilant? Am I dealing with a young African-American in a hoodie? And what conclusions do I draw about this person just based on appearance?
This kind of slowing down the moment exercise is hugely important for police, she says. All new recruits now have training like this. Undoing all bias obviously isn't possible, but Friedel says more awareness might start to alter everyday interactions. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
And then there were three. Unless a fourth candidate emerges in a potentially brokered Republican convention in Cleveland this summer. Let's assess the roster with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Hello, Dave.
Frank, let's start at the top. Donald Trump. Love him or loathe him? And there are many in either category.
Well, there's certainly more that dislike him than like him, and I'm talking now about national ratings, not just among Republicans, and he has the most negative image of any candidate who won their party's nomination since we've been measuring favorable and unfavorable ratings in this same way, and that goes back to about the 92 election. 64% of Americans say they have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump, 30% have a favorable opinion, more than 2-to-1 negative. part of Trump's issue here is that he has these extraordinary negatives among minorities in this country, non-whites, much more so than the other Republican candidates that we've tracked. So this is not just an issue of his being a Republican.
Some opponents of Donald Trump cite what they contend to be him being short on specifics. Now, we do know he's calling for a massive tax reform. How does that resonate with voters?
I would say the response is muted. One of the things he says specifically is that I will lower tax rates for all Americans. How's that? And seemingly that would sound great. You know, who could disagree with that? But response to that is it's not positive. In other words, more people say they agree or disagree, but it's not by a huge margin, about 13 points. Well up into the 30% of Americans say they actually disagree with that. And about a fifth of Americans say they don't really have an opinion on it. So that does not get the kind of overwhelming response that one might think it would. Interestingly, and this is kind of paradoxical, Trump has also said that he will close loopholes and eliminate deductions that are available only to the very rich, which of course includes him. Every time we've ever tested the idea of heavier taxes on the rich, Americans say yes. And we have over 60% of Americans who say, yeah, no, that's a good idea.
Now, regarding tax reform, Republican rival Ted Cruz calls for a 10% flat tax. How does that sound?
That test about the same as the idea of just lowering tax rates for everybody. A little more positive than negative, but a lot of Americans say they don't know. And there's sizable disagreement with the idea of a flat tax as well.
You cited the IRS, and Ted Cruz wants to abolish that, as well as at least four departments of government. Good, bad, indifferent?
Boy, those proposals lay an egg. The idea of eliminating the Department of Education, Department of Energy, Department of Commerce, and so forth, that Cruz has put forth, 63% of Americans say they disagree with that idea, and actually only 18% agree. So although Americans, and this is what's fascinating, Dave, Americans are very negative about government in general. But when it comes down to these kind of specifics, like eliminating departments or abolishing the IRS, which also tests more negative than positive, Americans really pull back. They don't see the sense in that, at least as they've learned about it to date.
Let's dare to look ahead to one hypothetical in November. The front runners, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. You mentioned the unfavorables for Donald Trump. Where does Hillary Clinton come up in that regard?
Her image is more unfavorable than favorable among all Americans as well. Her current numbers are 42% favorable, 53% unfavorable among the American public. So that's about a minus 11. But as I mentioned, for Donald Trump, his image is a minus 34. So he has almost a three times as negative an image among all Americans as does Hillary Clinton.
What does that imply for the potential for a third party run?
At about this time in 1992, had we been talking, Dave, I would have been pointing out that Ross Perot was ahead of both the Democratic contender, Bill Clinton, and the incumbent president, George H.W. Bush. And, of course, Perot, although he dropped out and came back into the race, ended up with 19% of the popular vote in 92. George H.W. Bush ended up not being a very popular candidate at all. So I would say, fast forwarding to today, yes, I think that it would be a propitious time for a well-heeled independent candidate.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Still ahead this evening, a South Jersey man takes a hands-on approach to fighting homelessness.
Nobody's really doing anything. Everybody's complaining about stuff, but nobody's really doing anything to step up.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Delaware Art Museum supports WHYY and presents Our America, the Latino presence in American art, now through May 29th. Drawn from the Smithsonian American Art Museum's renowned collection, this bilingual exhibition presents paintings, photographs, installations, and sculptures from over 70 contemporary Latino artists in the United States. For more information on the exhibition and related events, delart.org.
Bryn Mawr Rehab supports WHYY and for more than 40 years has been committed to delivering advanced physical rehab services to those recovering from serious illness or injury. Their team of specialists develops customized inpatient and outpatient treatment plans for a range of conditions, including brain injury, spinal cord injury, concussion, and stroke. Patients travel from across the country for Bryn Mawr Rehab Hospital's creativity and personalized therapeutic approach. Learn more, including real patient stories, at mainlinehealth.org/rehab.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller.
Race is an issue that I believe this nation cannot afford to ignore right now.
That's then presidential candidate Barack Obama 8 years ago today, part of his A More Perfect Union speech on race delivered at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. Let's look back and then ahead with Dr. James Peterson, Director of Africana Studies and Associate Professor of English at Lehigh University and host of The Remix right here on WHYY. Professor Peterson, thanks for joining us again Newsworks Tonight. Let's put it in context. That address came in response to a growing campaign issue with Obama both defending and distancing himself from incendiary statements made by his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
Mm-hmm. It's such a strange sort of feeling to sort of think about that moment in 2008 within the context of our current presidential election cycle. You know, I did a lot of public media commentary around the Jeremiah Wright issue. That was
at the time,
that was a big news issue. And I spent a lot of time trying to place Jeremiah Wright in his proper context, talking about the fact that he had served the country through the military, talking about the fact that the rhetorical space of the black church is a space where some of the most severe critique of the United States has come from historically. And Wright was kind of situated within that. I mean, obviously, then candidate Obama had to do a lot of work to distance himself from that because of the way the clip was edited, and because folks don't really know what goes on in black churches on Sundays. I think this is just a strange moment. But
safe to say that Americans never before heard such a contextualized and nuanced explanation of the history and legacy of relations and race by a U.S. presidential candidate.
It is safe to say that. It is safe to say that. And I think it's also safe to say that that is one of the soaring moments of Obama's political career. Unfortunately, those times where he spoke compellingly and directly about race have been so few and far between. He has not been that Obama often enough over the course of his two terms. And that, I think, sadly, is one of the reasons why we are where we are today.
On that same speech, Obama warned against making too much of a specific soundbite or a headline.
For we have a choice in this country. We can accept a politics that breeds division and conflict and cynicism. We can tackle race only as spectacle, as we did in the OJ trial, or in the wake of tragedy, as we did in the aftermath of Katrina, or as fodder for the nightly news. But if we do, I can tell you that in the next election, we'll be talking about some other distraction, and then another one, and then another one, and nothing will change.
Professor Peterson, especially poignant if you consider the news headlines, the killing of Trayvon Martin, 2012, Michael Brown in Ferguson, 2014, last year, Freddie Gray in Baltimore, one headline after another.
I mean, he's prescient there in the sense that what he's talking about is exactly what has come to pass. What we have seen is the steady stream of unfortunate loss of life, an inability for our nation to wrap our heads around it. And with the rise of Donald Trump, we've seen what was hidden beneath the surface of what candidate Obama was talking about in 2008, what he referred to as white resentment, what we're now seeing maybe as white anger, which has been produced in some ways as a result of the Obama administration. A lot of Trump's supporters are folks who feel like an Obama presidency has taken America away from what America is supposed to be.
We are clearly more politically polarized than 8 years back. Is it your opinion that we are also more racially polarized, or is it just being expressed more?
It's just the facts. I wish it was just my opinion. I mean, the SPLC has done incredible data surveys of the rise of certain hate groups. There's been great research done by scholars looking at how racism emerges online, how it's sort of spiked online in the Obama era. And certainly when we look at not just the protests, the Black Lives Matter protests are important and they're raising really, really important issues. But when you look at a Trump rally or a Trump gathering, I think we're seeing white anger on display there. And if you look at those folks and look at the demographic that follows that particular political leader, you'll see those are the same folks who are really rejecting the first black presidency of the United States.
I want to give you the opportunity to announce on our station your intent to run for president in 2020. Professor, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Dr. James Peterson, Director of Africana Studies and Associate Professor of English at Lehigh University, and host of The Remix right here on WHYY. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. and a half ago, a South Jersey contractor named Gary Smith decided that he wanted to buy a home in Camden, fix it up, and then give it to someone in need. Well, today, Smith handed it over to Janae Dawson, a homeless Army veteran from the distressed city. WHYY's Joe Hernandez was there and offers this report.
Oh, my goodness. I get keys. Oh, my goodness.
Keys. And look, this is really special. This is a Costa Rica keychain. That's I don't give up that lightly. So.
You're going
to
Costa Rica?
Yeah.
Costa Rica.
You might think Janae Dawson just won a vacation to the Caribbean, but actually she's standing in her backyard in a pretty rough part of Camden. Dawson and her 7-year-old son have struggled with homelessness ever since she got out of the service in 2010.
I'm not going to say that it's been an easy road. It's been a little bit rough trying to find my niche, trying to, you know, stay stable, have a good job. So, yeah, it's been a little rough.
But today, finally, the aspiring nurse has a place to call home. Standing quietly behind Dawson is Gary Smith, the guy who made all of this happen. He says the Whitman Park House was in bad shape when he first got it.
The roof was leaking in the back half. The windows were completely broken out. The door was kicked in.
He'd grown tired of hearing people talk about poverty in Camden without taking any action to fix it.
Nobody's really doing anything. Everybody's complaining about stuff, but nobody's really doing anything to step up. So, I mean,
friends and colleagues in the construction world donated time and materials to help Smith. And to find an eligible family, Smith teamed up with Catholic Charities, part of the Diocese of Camden, which put him in touch with Dawson. Mark Taylor runs the group's Veterans Services arm.
You want to make sure you're giving it to someone that's truly, you know, deserving or is in that situation, yet at the same time showing that an individual can, you know, can afford it and can sustain it themselves. You know, so to partner with someone like Gary, we can really connect him with these individuals.
Smith plans to buy and rehab more houses in Camden. Catholic Charities liked the idea so much, it's planning to replicate it in other parts of Camden and also Atlantic City. And Dawson plans to settle in and start using one of her favorite parts of the house.
I like to eat. Do you like to eat?
Love it.
That's my favorite part of the house. That's the part of the house I'll be at the most, is the kitchen.
Thurman Street, there's a new cook on the block. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
This is gorgeous. Everything, like this whole house is gorgeous. And I didn't see.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. We had a production assistance this week from Brett Rader and help from our intern, Jared Whalen. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the helm this week, Bob Alls, Al Banks, and Charlie Kyer. John Mussoni is acting vice president of news and civic dialogue. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.